what and when I think of H I P hip hop, I think of the A S A C C O accordion. What? How? Did you think of that? How did you think of that? Putting, applying the accordion to.
Oh, it happened naturally because my grandfather gave it to me, and since we've been playing together before, you know, I just thought I'll pick it up and play accordion now. I don't know. That's what happened.
How? L. How long have you two been playing together?
About 3 years.
Three years.
About 3 years. We've known each other a little longer than that. And, yeah.
Yeah. We've had periods where we wouldn't meet for a while or, you know, like those ups and downs, like every time.
Yeah, times when we're playing a lot or whatever. Yeah. But, yeah.
All kinds of life changes and, you know, different homes, different places, you know, so.
Like what? We want to hear about it.
Well, when we first started playing, we met through a common friend, our friend Charlie, who lives up in the hills. He's quadriplegic, and I've known him since I was a little kid and did attendant work for him and stuff. And I
knew him through Milo, who was a percussionist that knew him, and he actually sent me to Charlie because I'm originally from Poland, and that guy is a Greek guy who was born and raised in Poland, but he lived in Berkeley for 10 years or so, and he knew Charlie.
And was friends with him, and that's how we ended up meeting, was through him. And so when we first started playing together, I was living at his house, I think. But right away, I ended up leaving because of some differences we were having, and I was living out of our rehearsal studio for about 3 months.
With his dog, too.
With my dog, yeah. And so
I would, like, come down to rehearse, and it's like, oh, okay, hi, you know, and he's treating it as his home. Yeah.
And
funny.
Yeah, so we had that, and you've pretty much lived in the same place most of the time.
Yeah, I lived in Orinda for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He lives far away. So
yeah, I live far away.
We meet pretty often considering how far off he lives. So. But
where do you live?
I live in Danville. So I have to drive at least 35 minutes to come here. But I'm often in Berkeley or in the city, so I just try to.
Why do you live in Danville?
I don't know. Why do you live in Berkeley? It just happens so that I live there, you know. It's beautiful. It's really beautiful. I live in the foothills of Mount Diablo. So the air is very clean and there are no lights. You can see the stars, you can see the moon, and it's very pretty.
The woman that he lives with has
Jeannie,
has a kind of a, you know, it's not a huge house, but kind of a big house, and her kids are grown and away in college, and so we have our home
studio there,
set up there,
so
where
that's
we
really good.
Record and make like the beats that we were playing to. We have a little studio set up there to do that. So it's kind of cool.
What? How? Did you get H E here from Poland?
My grandfather lives here, and he's been here in the Bay Area for the last 40 or so years, 45 years probably. And at least half of the reason why I'm here is to take care of him, because the rest of my family is in Poland. Mm. So, you know, that's pretty much like how I originally figured out I should come out here to take care of him. So, he's pretty old. He's in his 90s, and all his friends already left him. They just passed on, you know. So, and I live very close by, you know, so I see him at least a couple times a week or even more.
He lives by himself?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's an independent man.
Is he doing?
He's doing great. Apart from his vision being really poor and his hearing, his mind is very, very sharp still, so it's hard to pull a joke on him. I always tell people, you know, you can't really fool him, you know, which is great, because a lot of old people lose it when, you know, but he makes sure that he exercises his body and his mind too, so I really admire that, and I learned a lot from him.
S. Why does he S T I still P play music?
Does he still play music? No, he sings and he jokes with me, but he doesn't play music anymore. He enjoys music, and I come down and play accordion for him. He used to play accordion pretty good, and he actually stashed it away. I knew he had it, and, you know, I was like, maybe you could give it to me since you're not playing, and then it took him a while to actually make up his mind and say, yeah, okay.
H. Hint, hint.
Excuse me?
Hint, hint.
Yeah. He gave me a lot of scores for tangos and things like that, you know. So I play that. I actually have gigs playing that kind of, you know, music.
I. H. E. A heard a L O lot of D I different things in your playing in your M music. But in there, you heard a lot of different things in their music. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we both like a lot of different stuff, and, you know, I don't know, just...
Like what?
Like what? Well, you know, mostly all I listen to is hardcore techno. That's what I really like to listen to. You don't hear much of that in our music. But I love all kinds of styles. I mean, I really... You know, I'm really influenced. I really love Stevie Ray Vaughan and Jimi Hendrix, and the, you know, and I've always loved rap music and rapping and stuff, and always just kind of thought it'd be cool to have my own take on it, because I like the art form a lot, but I like trying to say new things that haven't been said in rap and stuff, or try to branch out into something new, you know. So that's a fun challenge with that, and.
P R I N C E
Prince.
You heard some Prince. I've
heard a couple people say that lately, and that's kind of cool. I like that. I mean, I like Prince. He's really cool. So, but I like Prince. I never listen to him all the time, but yeah.
You know, I have a lot of influences too, because I started playing music when I was 5 years old. I started playing violin, and I played classical. I played Vivaldi and things like that.
Yeah.
And then
he was in a punk band.
Yeah, and then I was in a punk band, and then I played guitar. I played saxophone and piano and Latin percussions. And then I was a DJ for like extensively for like 6 years or 6-7 years. And
is this all in the United
that
States?
That was in no, that was back in Poland. I've been here only like for the last 4.5 years or so.
Yeah.
And so I DJed all kinds of styles, and in my DJing style, I always wanted to mix a variety of music. I never liked DJs who just played one kind of music all night, and I like to modulate in rhythm and harmony when I spin records, you know, and like bring back all kinds of, you know, obscure sounds.
Like L, U, like Lover. We mix like that all the time, all the different genres.
That's great. I believe that people like variety, and, you know, sometimes one kind of flavor becomes hip. So, you know, people just do it over and over and again, and they are even like hypnotized with that hip, you know, and they don't know that you can branch out and still have fun.
Yeah. When we first started Lover, it I pissed people off, the genre switching.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said it's like gives me a nosebleed. It's genre switching.
Well, you have to do it gently.
We don't do that. We don't do it gently. We'll go from classical music to techno. To
I meant nosebleeding.
Oh, the nosebleed.
Like, that usually happens when some abrupt change occurs.
Even in O, U, our. L, I, V, live shows. We'll book the way we'll book bands that are real different from each other, so people have that experience too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Good. That's great.
Yeah. Mm.
How did you get into A T T E attendant work?
Oh, well, I, you know, my mom and all her friends are like all old deadhead people, and Charlie the
I H E A R heard. You heard that in the music too?
Yeah. I definitely, you know, I grew up going to dead shows as a kid and stuff, and I didn't really get into the dead until I was like 15 and started, you know, going to shows with my friends. Charlie, my friend who's quadriplegic, he's always kind of been almost kind of like the center of the circle or something of all these friends, of this big family of friends that I kind of grew up around. And so I grew up around him, and I came to the Bay Area wanting to branch out further with my music, because I kind of had a weird family up in Washington State with my dad and stuff. And so I came and stayed with Charlie because he just lets people stay with him and always has people coming and going, because he needs a lot of help. So he just has people around. And so I kind of spent a couple of years living with him and working for him. And then I needed work and was looking in the paper and thought, oh, I've been around him all my life. I've done this stuff so much. I know all about it. And then just got into it. And now that's what I do and have been doing for the past 5 or 6 years. And I'm lucky because I know really cool people that I work for that I really like. They're like some of my very best friends. So that's kind of how I got into it.
I P I pissed the disabled community off when Frank first moved here in 75. That was like during the period where, you know, independence and like hiring people and not having your friends help. That was like what was the way it was.
Yeah.
And Frank always talked about it in those terms. Just, he said it deepens your relationship. Mm-hmm. Have your friends be the ones who do the attendance stuff because it will deepen the relationship. Yeah. That was very unpopular thing to say at that time. Uh-huh. It's kind of come around since then.
Yeah. I think it happens naturally if you have the right, even if it starts out as, I mean, you know, with like this guy Tony who I work for every day, it started out just as a, I guess I could say employee-employer relationship, even though it's not like seem like a boss or anything. It's like I come and work for him, we do whatever, but it started like that, but over the past 5 years, I mean, he's really become one of my closest friends, so... I think sometimes it can start one, you know, hopefully whichever way it starts, you end up being close friends, you know.
Yes.
So.
That is H E A L healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I love it. People always say, why don't you get a job as a nurse or something that pays more money? And I'm like, I would never want to do that. I like what I do and being able to come and be with the people I work for and have my dog there and hang out with them. And it's not like working at a hospital. It's so different. So I don't mind not making, you know, huge amounts of money because I love what I do every day. So I guess that's kind of why people would want a lot of money, is so that they could be happy in life. And
you're already happy.
Yeah. Pretty much.
I was no and when they see you cut the WA the wages for attendance, IST still HA had, you still had people because they weren't doing it for the money over the years when that would happen.
Yeah, it's a cool, to me, it's a neat, it's just a platform to, I don't know, kind of see and share a lot of the more fundamental things about life, about helping one another, because, you know, that's what makes life rich, you know, is just because we all really kind of help one another, you know. You see it in so many areas of life. It's great. So.
What did you think when you first came to the One Taste performance, the first time you met us and saw the performance?
What did I think?
What did you think?
Of what?
You, our W, H, O, our whole R E L A T relationship have B E Ben V I D videoed. Our whole relationship with you has been on video.
So I don't mind. I don't know. I don't know what you're getting at. No.
What did I think he just wants to know what your impression of was of when the, you first came in and met us and came to the performance and all that.
I thought it was a great experience for everybody to become a part of, just to experience some kind of flux of I don't even know how to describe that flux, like what that is exactly. It's just, it's almost like, to me, it's almost like a conversation. Yes. You know, like one big conversation where, you know, sometimes, let's say you're sitting on a bus and one person strikes you, you want to chat with them, but they're kind of scared and they don't want to talk. But they kind of want to talk, but not really. They're scared that something, I don't know exactly. And that reminded me, the whole performance reminded me of that, you know, that moment, that attitude, whether like you want to have a conversation or not, you know, kind of like being on the verge, you know. Because, I mean, you're, every time you're exposed to a question, you're risking something. You know, you're risking either, you know, exposure of something that you hold dear or some kind of embarrassment. And different people have that on different levels. Different people feel that they're, you know, touchy on different subjects, you know what I mean? And over with you guys, it was like a flux, like that door was open very wide. And
you're even when... U-A-S asked at, even when you asked a question, you are risked. Even when someone would ask a question, they would risk. You mean anyone?
Sure. Anyone? Absolutely. I meant
like
that both ways, yeah.
Me, when you would ask a question, it was a risk. N, E, never. You never knew what would happen just by asking somebody a simple question.
Right. Here. Because some person might not even give you the answer, and then they get offended by the question itself.
Yes, yes. W-H-I, which is why we, L, lost the space.
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
You are a N ran O. You ran out and got your accordion.
Yeah, because you asked me what I was doing or something, like who I was or something like that, and then I told you I was a musician, and then you asked me whether I had my instrument with me, and I said, yeah, it's in my trunk, and I had to actually walk a block and a half to get it. It's quite a sacrifice.
And you came back.
Yeah, I'm always eager to play music and interact with people that way, and that's my channel.
And you see a came back to the N to the next workshop.
Yeah.
Yes. How M, how many workshops did you attend?
Two, I think. Only two.
Were you there at the last one?
I don't know if that was... I don't know, because I kind of lost track.
Yes, he was. Okay, yeah, Frank knows. Yeah.
Yeah.
He...
I don't know.
You...
You answer your own question.
You are E F refused to S O sign the release form. They had offered you a release form and asked you to sign it when you came in the very last night, and you refused to sign it.
Because of the videotaping?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? I used to work on film and TV and things, you know, like back in Europe, and I was really familiar with like copyright laws.
Yes.
And things like that, and since I didn't know exactly where it was going or what's going on or who you guys are, that's why I didn't. I think it's, I mean, I believe in freedom of expression and stuff, but with today's media, it's like you can, it's a hard one because you can't really, like, I mean, it's okay to film, but then if you want to distribute it or broadcast it, you always have to ask people that participated in the thing for their permission, you know? And it's one thing is to go out in the street and take a picture of somebody's face, and another thing is to publish it and make it a commercial with their face in a magazine without them knowing it, you know? I think that's why I didn't sign it. I didn't think that it was of that importance to me anyway, you know? But it was more like an automatic thing, you know? Like, I don't know enough about the project and where it's going.
It was not us. We weren't the ones that were asking for it. It was the people that ran the space that wanted the thing. 'Cause,
Yeah, you know what? Another thing is that, you know, I'm really reluctant giving my personal information away and signing anything. I just don't like to do that, you know? Mm. And probably that was a part of it, if, you know. I hate the paperwork and all those applications and things like that. I don't like them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know? Frank said to them that we've been doing this over 30 years without getting people to sign anything. Right. And he felt pretty strong. Never had a problem. Yeah. We felt very strongly about not wanting to start. And if you, A, ask people to sign it, S.E. sets up a frame that is not T trust. Sets up a frame that's not trust. If you ask people to sign.
Basically,
S. So. P. People. S. T. A. Started. Start. Not trusting at that point. W. H. Which is the EX exact opposite of what we're going for.
Totally. Yeah.
But then they SE set me. They set me up by having people sign it. Is that what you mean? Is that I see. The setup was the woman that, I don't know if you were aware of any of this, but there was a woman that was there, and she was with the attorney, the attorney for the space, who had been kind of hovering around from the beginning of our relationship with them. And he had come to more than one of the workshops, who did not want us. He didn't want us there, right? From the beginning, he didn't want us there. And they had all these legal...
To find a way to kick you out and say, oh yeah, we have this common space here for everybody, but not for you.
And, but, see, but the... C O are the core group that ran the space were the ones that would come every week, and they were really into it. And they were every other week we did it, really. They were really into it. They were talking about how big a change was making in their lives and all that stuff. So I think that made him want us out even more, because things were starting to shift in a way he didn't care for. And then the woman that he brought with him that night, partway through the performance, she just freaked out about the camera going. Even though, you know, we're not sneaky about it, the camera's just like there. And confronted us, like, you know, an hour into the performance, she's ready to, you know, get into this. And we said, hey, you know, this is the middle of a workshop. If you want to talk about it, we'll talk about it later. And we were essentially ambushed by her and the attorney afterwards. They came up to us and said, you can't use any of the footage that had her in it. You have to agree to cut out anything that she's in. Because they knew when we first got the space that what we do is we videotape it, we put it on Lover, we put it on cable access, it goes out, you know, all over the place. Yeah, that was never a secret.
Yeah, right.
I even had a video of them agreeing to it, because they were guests on the show. That's how we met them. They were guests on the show, and we were telling them how we lost the space we had at UC Berkeley, because we had this great gig for like 8 months. We did a free series there, and they were going, oh. And so Frank was saying, I'm looking for a regular space that I don't have to pay for, that we can do this free thing that people can just come in and do. And because you build a community, you build community. Yeah. You know, I think you should do it at our place. And we usually charge you rent, but we don't want to charge you rent. And you, nude, we said it was nude, erotic, it was on video, it would play, everything, all this is on the tape. Yeah, it was all on tape, playing on TV all the time, so it was like clear that they agreed to all that.
It seems like, if you're going to do something that's really expansive and liberating, with the kind of, it's kind of strange, but just with the kind of society or whatever we live in, it's usually going to cause some kind of stir. So,
yep.
So it's kind of it seems like something saying that you're probably doing something right.
Exactly. Right. It's exactly the way we look at it.
If people are getting upset like that and you're not really doing anything that's harmful or violent or anything, then you're probably doing something right, because
that's exactly the way we look at it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know what, I come from a European perspective, and nudity in Europe is much more accepted than it is here. Even though in the United States there are so many extremes, that we don't have in Europe. Maybe that's why. But what's really acceptable here, widely acceptable, is violence. And, violent pictures, people with guns blowing up each other and stuff. And that's what Europeans think is really obscene.
And S-E sex, W, I, with, out, P, A, passion, or intimacy. That's okay, but it's the intimacy that freaks people out.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Like this. Like there, like at one taste they had, that's what was seemed to be what freaked them out, the intimacy, not the nudity. They have sex, right? The sex thing was like that's what they do, so they weren't like freaked out by that aspect of it. It seemed, but the intimate thing seemed to, be freaky. S. So the N E next day. Right. The next day, we get a phone call from our contact person there. We said, oh, we've been talking to the attorney all ever since you left last night. And he suggested, and we agree, that the only way you can continue working here is if, and then he lists this whole list of things. No more video. Mm-hmm. People sign when they come in. I don't even remember anymore. There was a long list.
They wanted the videos back.
Oh, they wanted all the videos back from the workshops did. Our videos.
To destroy them.
Oh, my gosh.
We couldn't use their name on any of the publicity, so I don't know how you're going to tell people where to come. You can't, you know, I guess you could give the address, but not the name of the space.
I heard that dissatisfaction, professional dissatisfaction among lawyers runs like half or two-thirds, you know? Like, they go through law school, and then they become lawyers, and then they're really kind of unfulfilled, you know. I just recently talked to somebody that's pretty smart, and he told me that. And
the and P Y P S Y psychologists. It's the same kind of thing.
Yes, I think they did way more harm than actually help people.
Psychologists,
yeah, and I remember. Yeah, I remember. Oh yeah, I remember growing up.
Why? Why dentists?
Nobody likes dentists.
I used to like my dentist. I thought she was pretty hot.
Guess that's a secret.
She wasn't a good dentist, though.
Did you hear what Erica said, Mikey? Did you pick that up? Yeah, because Erica was saying that dentists and psychologists are the ones with the highest suicide rate, she thinks. And Frank had said, why dentists? And she thought that she speculated that it was because nobody likes dentists. Nobody wants to go to the dentist. I can see psychologists, them having a high suicide rate.
Mm-hmm.
But dentists have a hard time.
Yeah, my grandma used to tell me, you have to be extremely careful with those internal dialogues.
His grandma used to tell him, you heard what he said, yeah. What? What internal dialogues? No, what? P? What does she mean by that?
Like sometimes you're talking to yourself in your mind. And you go on and on and on and on. And that's when you have to be careful.
Because I think that relates to the psychologists and how they have a high suicide rate. Start thinking about stuff a little too much, maybe.
What is the S C E scene in Poland like?
I don't know what kind of scene you mean, but definitely people like to have fun, and there are a lot of parties going on, and in major cities there are tons of clubs, and people, when they go out, they really dance and get down. It's amazing. I think in the communist time, people were very suppressed by the Soviet domination, and, you know, they really, like, learn how to make something out of nothing and how to be happy without all the material goodies and,
like us.
Right. I mean, we've kind of thought of West as, you know, colorful but very jaded. And you know, with a lot of hang-ups. And and I don't know exactly how to explain
W
that, but.
Oh, wonder why. Yeah. Gee, I wonder why.
But
would what we do G O go O over a would what we do go over in Poland? The workshop, the kind of performance stuff you saw?
Yeah. It's just I'm familiar with those theater groups, you know, and all kinds of actually and some of the Polish theater leaders were kind of very progressive as far as, you know, teaching actors how to be an actor and how you have to become the character and how you have to, like, really open yourself, you know. So I think it's really hard for me to generalize, because if you were in a proximity of one of the Catholic churches or some nun or some stupid priest, or even not them, because they're probably laid back more than, you know, the people that go to church, you know, like their parishioners are probably more uptight than the priests themselves, I would say. But, you know, there are still a lot of different, you know, people who would just mind, for the same reasons that the lawyer minded that, or, you know.
I've hardly left the West Coast. I've never left the country, but my notion is that pretty much anywhere you go, or in most places, you're going to find most kinds of people. I mean, it's going to be in varying amounts, or like in varying proportions to one another, but but you're gonna have people that wanna do stuff that's fun and new and freeing and, you know, makes them feel good in all these ways, and other people who feel that that's wrong and want them to stop even when it's their own thing. And so, I don't know. I kind of think you're gonna encounter almost the same thing everywhere you go, kind of, where you have people that like to have fun, basically. And then people that don't.
Like. N-O. Now. We. Can. Not. Even. We can't even rent a space to do our art.
Yeah.
We See, can't even rent a space.
Oh, it's just
that's
hard
our
for
experience.
You?
I mean, we rent.
Because
they
know what you're doing, what you want to do, and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like we rented the Balazzo for the last gig we did, and they're not answering Frank's emails anymore. Mm-hmm. And the when we were there at the end of it, he said, "Yeah, we could keep doing this."
People
and
that they don't want to take a chance, and they know that's what they're doing.
Yeah,
right.
Know? I have a friend who has a medical marijuana dispensary, and he tried and tried to open one in Berkeley, and you know, wasn't able to because of the city, and couldn't in Oakland, so he eventually had to go do it in San Francisco, where their laws about it were looser, and even still there, because they know they're taking a risk on it, because it's a controversial thing, it was really hard for him to get a place, you know, and the only kinds of areas you can get a place to have a dispensary is, like, you know, total ghetto neighborhoods, and really, I mean, it is, you know, in some ways it's kind of, you know, legal pot dealing, I think, you know, because there's not it's a new thing, medical marijuana, but there's still a basic thing where there's a lot of people out there that need it, and it's cool to have a friendly, safe place that can provide it and stuff. And I think that since it's controversial and you know, they're taking a risk on it, it's like landlords just don't want to do that, you know, with performance or with, you know, anything, you know.
See, L. Clubs. Can't get booked in any clubs anymore. For years, we were playing, like, all the time. We'd play in chemos, mostly. Yeah. And then that all just dried up. And, you know, we've talked to other bands that are more edgy. Same thing. They're saying, we just don't play anymore. Can't find a space.
Yeah.
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 L. A. But we do have spaces in L.A.
L.A., yeah.
L.A., cool.
So whenever we can scrape together enough money to go down to L.A., we have places to play down there.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I see another problem, too, is that people don't really go out that much.
That's what we've been told.
You know, people, like having those shows over the internet or... You know, TV almost makes more sense because people just, you know, with driving, with drunk driving, with lack of public transportation, with, you know, all the prices out there, they just don't go out, you know, and they, and plus, you know, this culture and this information age or whatever we call it, you know, pushes all the DVD, surround sound, internet, you know, bedroom settings for people to actually vegetated kind of, you know what I mean? And you know, that's something that I've noticed here in the U.S. when I moved here and I didn't know many people. And I still don't know that many people. Mm. And, like, you know, in Europe, in Poland, let's say, but all over Europe, I would think, you know, you go out and you can meet somebody at the bar or at a club. And then you can bond with them, and then they invite you home, and you become friends, and then, you know, there's some kind of a network. If you don't know anyone, you go out to town, and you meet somebody, you know? And then you can make friends within one night or something like that. Over here, people are so scared to bring you over to their house or even talk to you.
It was like... It used to be like that in the U.S. I mean, years ago, that was our experience.
Right, and I see that. I see that actually, you know, because I go to Poland every once in a while. I go back and I see the, you know, hegemony, the expansion of Americanisms, you know, and all the culture and all that stuff that's really, really heavy, you know, and it floods the whole world. And people don't even know what they're getting into. You know, they think it's nice, it's Pepsi, it's jeans and all that stuff and all that freedom on the screen, you know, but they don't really, they aren't really aware of what it brings, you know, and I'm really generalizing here, but I guess you know what I'm, what I mean. It's more,
that's what makes, you know, what we do and what you guys do and everything so important, you know.
Yes,
I mean,
exactly.
Not that it's not good to do anyway, just for fun, but it's it actually makes it really important because there's so much of that that it's just, you know.
That consumerism and conspicuous, you know, consumption.
Yes, is the REA real reason why we lost the spaces, lost one taste. That was the real reason we lost one taste, because of creating of what we were just talking about. In on a d deep d e E, P, E, deeper level. On a deeper level, we there than, on a deeper level than J, just C, A, S, casual, S, E, sex. On a deeper level than just casual sex. That they can S E L sell Oh, they can. That's what they do. They sell casual sex. That's kind of one of the things they do. But the fact that we were creating. See. Oh. Community in a deeper way. That seemed like that's the thing we were kind of up against that freaked them out and wanted, why they wanted us out. I mean, we experienced that all the time. Like when we did the UC Berkeley series, we had 8 months of doing it. And by the time that we did the last one, we had a big room packed with people. People that had been coming over and over again, all kinds of people, musicians, artists, whoever, that were really excited about the community and the deep feeling that was being created. Lost our sponsor. Boom.
Yeah.
You know, just like boom. And you can really feel it. You can just feel it that you're just pushing against something that doesn't want to get pushed
against.
Well,
it's called brainwashing, you know. Society is brainwashed. And people do it subconsciously. People shy away from those things because that's what the culture, that's what we're pre-programmed.
Well, it's threatening, you know. Yeah. When you have such a rigid kind of just almost dormant, asleep kind of thing going on, because I think, you know, life and love and energy and these things, they're uncontrollable, you know, and that's a beautiful, wonderful thing, but people, they're used to a kind of life that can be contained, and so really I think people are just afraid to try what's new, you know, because it's
yes, like the L A last UC. That was the feeling that was there with all of the people. I mean, we even had the janitors who were liked us being there. You know, the all-night janitors. They would come in and they were kind of kidding with us and like, oh, I don't really know what you're doing, but it was like kind of, they gave their approval. Yeah, they liked how it felt.
Yeah.
And the A audience. Yeah, the audience, it was almost like, whoa, because there was so much like energy there. Like they STA started DRU drumming on anything.
That's scary.
That's scary stuff. When people feel that loose, that's really
that's
scary,
really
stuff.
Scary. Yeah, you know, I have a boss. I hope you're watching it, Don. That he, I'm really sorry for him because he is just a very unhappy person, and when he sees somebody having fun, it's something wrong. Right. I can feel it.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, because he occasionally he jokes and he comes up with those jokes, but a lot of the times his jokes are just either, you know, putting somebody down, calling somebody an idiot or something that's funny to him.
Right.
You know? But if somebody has genuinely has fun or something, he thinks it's there's something wrong with it.
Yes.
And I just recently noticed that you know, many people have that outlook on life.
What? I? And Erica? Oh, well, so we take a walk every day. So for years, it's been Mikey and I taking a walk, and we always hold hands. And, you know, we don't really know any of our neighbors, but people say hi. Everybody's friendly, and they say hi. And then Erica moved in, and so on her 2 days off, it's the three of us taking walks. It really took us a while to figure it out, but we were freaking everybody out because there's three people holding hands walking down the street. That's all we're doing. Mm-hmm. We're not doing anything else. We're just walking along, talking about the day, holding hands, and people like they won't even, the same people that will say hi if it's just Mikey and I, they won't even say hi to us.
Me and Tomek were just talking about something that really reminds me of that, like, just about how everybody, they're so hung up on this boyfriend-girlfriend idea that they're not open to, the, you know, and I mean, to even just three people walking down the street holding hands, which is... shouldn't even be something that people think once about.
Right.
Yeah, know, right. Just, what I've noticed here in this, you know, in the United States is that people, like, they get very possessive of the spouse or friend or girlfriend. They really get very, very possessive. Before, and I don't know what the threshold here is. Is it like kissing somebody, going out on a date, or having anal sex, or what is it? You know what I mean? Like, where is one, the...
That is one of my P-R-O problems. I don't know what the threshold is.
Right, yeah, I have no idea. You know. And, you know, another thing is that, you know, I often, like, speak my mind like that, and sometimes people say, like, so, why are you here? Why are you in this country? If you don't like it, just go. You know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go into the reasons why I'm here, but it's just a weird thing to say.
Right.
You know, because it's very... uninviting.
Understatement. U N H U unhuman.
Pardon me?
It's unhuman.
Yeah. And another thing is when I moved here, I heard stories and I kind of felt it that you have to be very careful about all those sexual harassment laws, that you can't, like, even smile to somebody because that might be sexual harassment. And, you know, if you have money, they're going to sue you.
Right.
And I always tell the difference, like, if you were to grab a girl on the bus in Poland, she would turn around and slap you in the face if she didn't like it. If she liked it, fine. You know? But over here,
oh my God,
she would just, like, oh my she wouldn't God. Do anything, and she would just sue you.
You'd hear from her attorney. Jay.
Right.
Jay, that is one of the advantages of being the, of the T-R- E S thresholds. That's one of the thresholds. But I thought you were going to say one of the advantages of being spastic, because mm-hmm. Frank has often written or talked about how he can, like, reach his hand out and grab a woman's ass, mm-hmm. and they'll think he can't control his arms.
Right. Yeah. Well, you got a ticket.
Yeah.
Make sure you got it on paper somewhere. Get sued.
But my A, I... My aim, Frank's aim is perfect. Mm-hmm. When he grabs for something, he's like dead on. Although, you know, people who see him as a crip, as a disabled person,
right.
don't get that. They think it's just like a spasm he's having.
Right.
You wonder about, I used to work for a friend who has CP, and he had this girl working for him, and he kept apologizing because he kept grabbing her breasts, you know, and she was just starting, and she was like, you don't have to apologize anymore. And she's like, I know. Now I'm going, I wonder if that was intentional or not. You know?
E, X. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I don't apologize. Frank never apologizes. How? Why? Why apologize?
Yeah.
that speaks for itself.
All of W H I, which is why we do what we do. All of these things we're talking mm-hmm. about. Yeah. Erica, in her work, Erica is the director of enrichment at a large retirement home, and so she brings, you know, us into the job. And her boss told her job was to have fun, mm-hmm. and so. But she brings, like, you know, the sexiness and the joy and that expansiveness into the place. And the residents really respond to that and really, really enjoy it.
Oh, by the way, I just want to tell you something that I thought about. That from my experience, I think throughout the human life or people's life, the most uptight period is, like, between the 30s and 50s. That's when people are the most uptight. I think they're not uptight when they're young.
Right.
And they're not uptight when they're old.
Right.
But when they have, like, too much responsibility.
That's why I like to work with old
people. You know, because I hang out with old people, too, you know,
yeah.
through my grandfather, you know.
Yeah.
And they are very relaxed.
Yeah.
They know that you can let go and nothing wrong's going to happen, you know. And they don't have those,
yes.
You know, I guess the most scary thing is what other people are going to think of me and
right.
talk about me and get me in trouble at work with my family and wherever I go shopping.
H E hey you if I C A cared about that I would be D dead by now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You would kill yourself internally with your thoughts. You know, and just like it's self destruct. It's possible.
Yeah, no, you can't really care about the acceptance of others in the kind of world we live in, because you kind of have to commit a kind of suicide to fit into what is truly, like, acceptable and doesn't cause a fuss. I mean, even, you know, I just, you know, I stand at the bus stop and I feel, I mean, I feel unique or strange just because I like to dance with my Walkman on or something, but I don't care about what the people think. I like to mm-hmm. dance while I'm standing around. So, you know, you can't really hold yourself back, you know.
E. R. Erica? Does. G. Groups at the Claremont, at the place that she works. Tell them about the groups.
I mostly lead mm-hmm. groups in assisted living, which is people who need a little, whose minds are a little looser. and we do a lot of movement and mirroring each other's movements, and we do a lot of sound making. And singing and
chair dancing, shoulder rubs,
mm-hmm. moving the hips, and making up stories and poems, being
awesome.
Silly,
P.
making crazy noises
I.
all down the hall,
and pinching. Right. Well, there was one resident in particular who always liked to pinch Erica's ass whenever she'd be walking down the hall or something, like this 90-year-old mm-hmm. woman, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. C. L. A. Oh, Erica brings her clarinet, and we'll just, like, walk up and down the halls playing. Mm-hmm. And people enjoy that.
For sure.
Mm. Not. P. L. A. Play. Playing. Oh, like traditional songs or anything, but
no,
she doesn't
I don't really know how to do that.
To
play. I used to play. I used to play a long time ago in high school, and now I don't know if I just make up stuff, and they really like it. That's why I keep bringing it because they really respond to it. And people say, "When are you gonna do a concert?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about? I don't know what the hell I'm doing." And they'll say things like, "Are you in a band?"
Yeah.
Yes,
I am. The Toronto All Stars.
You're very lucky, though, because, you know, not many institutions would allow that. And, you know, I know of an institution right across the hills where they wouldn't allow that kind of stuff. So, you know, you're lucky to be in Berkeley where people are more open-minded still. Mm. And, you know, Berkeley is one of those little points on the globe where, you know, we can do what we can do and not get in trouble for it still, you know, because, I mean, it's hard to get perspective to what you have. That's all I'm saying, you know, that I think it's great with the kind of work you got, you know.
Yeah, the whole program was really set up. We had quite a base for a lot of fun. Because there's tons of stuff. Our calendar is really full. We have classes from the Oakland School District. I mean, we have like 13 activities every day or something. Well, you know, and like, then we hire a lot of people. We have music at least, you know, people come in and play music at least twice a week, maybe more than that.
Live
stuff. We have people who come in and teach all kinds of movement stuff, Tai Chi, yoga, Rosen movement, Feldenkrais.
We always say we're ready to move into
this
place.
We show movies. We have Netflix. We show movies. You know, there's people who, residents who teach improv class and music, different jazz class and...
How many residents do you have there?
About 150.
About 50 residents?
About 150.
That might be pushing it.
About 150. We go out on outings. Mm-hmm. We go to the
symphony.
We went to the symphony
today.
We go see plays. We go on ferry rides. We
go to baseball games.
Go to baseball games. Basketball games.
But you know what?
Where do we sign up?
Yeah, but you know, I can't miss my point here. That I blame everything on religion. Because especially, I mean, I come from a Catholic country, or at least, you know, it's theoretically Catholic, you know, because people don't necessarily listen to what the Pope has to say. They just claim they're Catholic and they like Christmas and Easter, you know. So it's like there's a difference between religion and spirituality and tradition, you know. There's three different things. But one thing about Christian religion and all religions that preach afterlife is that this life here it's okay to suffer because you're going to win in bonus life, the afterlife, you know? So the whole suffering and being humble and kind of having all those problems, that's endorsed. You know, it's good to suffer like that. You know what I mean? So actually having fun or like forgetting about this is sinful. You know, and a lot of, you know, European tradition here in the U.S., that's where it's rooted. You know, that you're not supposed to be open and fun and smiling. And you, I mean, or there are certain times that you can do it, but not all your life.
Right.
You know? And it's very, very strong. And look how many people go to those churches and listen to that and truly believe that, you know. And I don't know how they can ever be happy. So that's my point here.
Oh,
I and I C A call it the combine plot.
Yeah,
Frank calls it the combine plot.
He's, combine plot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. This is like back in the 70s, you used to say, he turned to me and say, tell them what I mean by the combine plot. And it was like a wall. People just didn't get it. Because I would say, well, you know, it came from the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. There's the character that says that everybody's hot-wired. Mm-hmm. And if you do something they don't want you to do, you get this jolt.
Right.
And so Frank said, That's true, that everybody is hot-wired, and it's kind of what we've been talking about. You know what the parameters are and on a deep kind of programmed level, what you should and shouldn't do, and that's what kind of keeps people doing what they do.
By the way, anyone want to see my dick?
W.
Strange inside joke. I'm not going to get into joke, it. Yeah.
What did he say? By the way, does anyone want to see my dick? And then he said, that's a strange inside joke, and I'm not going to get into it.
No, it's about being hot-wired, and like our friend did that, you know? That.
Hot-wired?
No. And that, like... anyway, I'm not going to explain the whole story because it sounds going to be as funny to you.
Requires a lot of explanation.
Right.
on that note.
How courageous of you, though. That's cool.
On that note, where can people see the Urban Monks? Is there anything you want to tell people before we sign off?
We've got a website. It's urbanmonksmusic.com. And that has our contact information and upcoming gigs, which we don't have any scheduled at the moment. but we will soon. So,
yes.
And also, too, we've got, CDs that we're happy to send out to people. So if you... I think there's a phone number on there, too. If you call the phone number or email us, again, it's urbanmonksmusic.com. We'd be happy to hook you up with some music, recorded stuff. And
we post information about our gigs there, too. So.
Yeah.
Can Lover get copies of your CDs
to
play on Lover?
Yeah. We actually brought some with us.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah.
There's no accordion on the CD, though.
The accordion's kind of a newer addition.
Yeah, we're working on new recordings.
The accordion, so.
Okay, and we need to set up a. Jay, a jam. From time to time, we do jams here.
Oh,
we know
cool.
that,
yeah.
And we'll set one up and let you guys know
great.
About
yeah,
it.
We're always happy to
yeah. It is the the only venue we play at right now.
Yeah.
The Shaman's Den.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because in this system, actually, I guess if you buy a place, if you own a place, you can do whatever you want. You know what I mean? So it's like, I mean, if you have to rely on other... No?
Then they use zoning...
Oh, right. Yeah. And there's no zoning for your kind of stuff anyway. Anywhere.
I know. Yeah.
Maybe you'll get some mountain in Nevada or something.
It is a C H. You, a church, right? We are a license. We are a church.
Oh,
we've been
nice.
A church
that's,
since 76,
it, yeah.
I
nice.
Think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You're tax exempt and whatnot.
All legal.
Mm-hmm.
I R IRS signed off on us. Well, they didn't with first go round. This is the mid 70s. They said no, because you don't believe in God, you have to believe in God.
Oh.
So we got the ACLU, some fancy dancy high end attorneys in Washington D.C. to represent us, and they took all of Frank's writings and stuff and made a case that for us, God, the God we believe in is what everybody has in them.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And Frank is the prophet of that. Aren't you?
Yes. And so the IRS went for that.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we're signing off then. Urban Monks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.